through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome in to Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross here. Some news. I'm not sure if you guys have heard it. Not sure if we've been talking about it today. But in case you missed it, Seahawks have parted ways with offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer. The most interesting part of this news is, quote, based on differences of philosophy. And that's really, really where the questions, the conversations, the debate pop in, because I've not seen anything like that from this organization. It's one thing to part ways with Daryl Bevel. After 2017, you finish with 9 wins, don't make the playoffs for the very first time, at least with Russell Wilson, I think the second time or so with Pete Carroll. It was a bad season all around. But you now parted ways with Brian Schottenheimer after finishing 12-4 for the first time since going to a Super Bowl, the last time you were in a Super Bowl. You set a franchise record for most points scored. This is, of course, ignoring the fact that your offense fell off a cliff in the second half of the season, and a quote by Tyler Lockett that was not a great reflection on your coaching staff, hinting that they struggled with making adjustments. I don't think that was Tyler Lockett throwing anyone under the bus intentionally, but but it was a comment that left a lot of people questioning whether or not Brian Schottenheimer was the answer moving forward. I think that most are in agreement that Brian Schottenheimer was not. But the question is, what were those philosophical differences, and will they lead to Pete Carroll making a decision on the OC moving forward that will keep this team out of a Super Bowl? That's a big thing to say. Pete Carroll is a winning head coach who's been winning for decades and knows more about football than I ever will. There's part of you as a fan that thinks, who am I to say he's not going to make the right choice? There's another part of you that's watched this team struggle and stay in playoff limbo ever since the last time they went to a Super Bowl, haven't been back to the NFC Championship game even, and you've wondered, why are we going back to what hasn't worked?
Right. I think it's a very fair question. Isn't it crazy, though, Stacy, in this league, one moment you can have Skybox Shoddy. Everybody's talking about Skybox Shoddy, who is a hot name in future head coaching conversations. And the other moment, Brian Schottenheimer is no longer the offensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks. The NFL is a crazy business.
Yeah.
It is a brutal business. And Brian Schottenheimer's departure was surprising to me because I did not believe that Carroll would make the move based off of the accomplishments this offense has made this season. Carroll's loyalty to his staff, I mean, it's very, very evident through his years. He is a very loyal coach to his staff, and he believes in the best in people. But when it came out that Brian Schottenheimer is leaving, it didn't just say, hey, thank you for your time here, and we'll see you later. It was, no, they parted ways because of philosophical differences. And I think that, to me, was the most surprising aspect, that it ended in that way, that it ended with a clear difference of opinion between Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer, and in terms of the vision of this offense moving forward. And I also believe that it had to do with the level of Pete Carroll's involvement in the offense. We have plenty of evidence to support that. Brian Schottenheimer going up to the press box, I don't think was by accident. It wasn't for Shoddy's benefit, per se, to see better. I think it was more so the fact of wanting to get away from Pete Carroll's constant conversation on the sideline and just having a place where he can kind of think from time to time. I think that you look at a lot of the decisions or a lot of the mishaps that happened on third down and fourth down in terms of clock management, time management, it was the fact that they didn't get plays in. They didn't get personnel in early enough. And it's like, how do you not know what those calls are? Because they're debating those calls, right? They don't have the answer right away. They're debating the calls. So I think that there was a lot of that, you know, moving forward. There were a lot of things, Stacy, that I loved about Brian Schottenheimer. Amazing guy. Amazing guy. Loved his family. Loved getting the chance to get to know him. Good, very good ball coach. Helped revitalize the offense when he came here in 2018 over the next three seasons. Helped Russell Wilson elevate. But let me be clear. I believe that this move was, in fact, very necessary for one specific reason only. And that was the lack of adjustments that Brian Schottenheimer and this offensive staff could not make in the second half of the season. The lack of adjustments that was not made in the Giants game, for example. The lack of adjustments that were not made versus too high coverage. The inability to adjust in games, not an effective short to intermediate pass game, no screen game, little synergy with the run game to complement the pass game. The plan that unfolded itself on Saturday against the Rams was as disappointed as I've ever been to witness a plan unfold. It was extremely frustrating. And I think for Pete Carroll, as he watched that, I don't believe that he felt that that Shoddy could get away from some of the tendencies that he had heading into the last couple weeks of the season.
Now, speaking of Shoddy potentially moving to the booth to get away from Pete, Joe Fan of NBC Sports Northwest joined us the other day right here. He says Pete's got to stop doing one big flaw.
Micromanaging in the highest pressure situations is such comprehensively bad leadership in any capacity, whether you're a football coach or whether in any industry. I mean, there's no situation where someone's trying to execute their job in a moment of peak pressure and consequence, and they've got someone in their ear saying, nope, can't do that. And you're saying, wait a minute, what are we doing here?
Now, it is possible for multiple things to be wrong here. I do think Brian Schottenheimer, based only on the insight we have on the outside world from comments from players or the coach or the philosophical differences explanation the Seahawks gave, I do think it's fair to assume he didn't make the adjustments necessary to win. Is he a bad coordinator? No, but it's clear that he wasn't a perfect fit for the weapons and the type of team that this team is. I'm also guessing that Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer disagree on how to win, how you win football games.
Right.
But the question is, are you going to get someone in here who really knows how to do that? And we're going to keep exploring this later when we talk about potential OC fits. Can you get someone in here who really knows how to do that, who's going to come in and put up with that kind of thing? Are you going to get an established guy coming in here, putting up with a head coach who reportedly meddles a bit, gets involved a bit? It's your right as a head coach to do that. Don't get me wrong. It's Pete Carroll's team. This guy has been overseeing successful teams for long stretches of times. One part of you thinks, who am I to tell Pete Carroll not to meddle?
Mm-hmm.
But also, there hasn't been a great outcome when he has. That fourth down decision was a failure.
Yeah, it was. The fact that ever happened, and you saw the rift and the disagreement between the two of them, I mean, that to me manifested itself at the worst possible time.
Well, and Pete said, oh, well, the problem is we went off sides. The problem is you had 2 minutes plus of real time to figure something out, and then you were rushing to the line to get it done.
Correct.
Yes, Jordan Simmons had a false start, but would you have been in that exact situation had you not spent so much time figuring out how to get this done?
Exactly. And had you been in clear synergy with your offensive coordinator, had you trusted him to make the right call in that moment, I think that those are all things that are very, very valid and very frustrating for an offensive coordinator in this situation. I believe that the second half of the season, you look at the way it unfolded, to me, it was unacceptable, right? And the way that unfolded, particularly in the last, I would say, four games of this season, it just can't be. And so with Pete Carroll talking and sitting down with Brian Schottenheimer and talking through it, it just became very clear that Pete Carroll and Brian Schottenheimer were not going to see eye to eye, and that this was going to be a good working relationship moving forward. And so now the question is, who are they going to bring in? What style is going to dominate this conversation? And typically, for everybody, typically in the last two times that this has happened, Pete Carroll and the Seahawks move extremely quickly when it comes to hiring an offense coordinator. Like the last two times, it's taken them essentially like 3 or 4 days in between mm-hmm. to hire an offensive coordinator. And when this happened, two things I thought immediately first. These were my first two reactions. Number one, if Pete Carroll is truly about always competing, you go after the best. You go after the best. You go after a proven guy in this league right now that can innovate, or go after a rising star that has all the credentials to take the next step. You trust them to do their job and focus on culture building and the defense. You bring the guy in, you trust him, you allow him to do his thing, and you focus on what you do best. And that is how you get one of those guys to come in, a true impact star, right? A guy that can really take things over, like Sean McVay did with Brandon Staley, right? He interviewed him, they talked ball, and very quickly, Sean McVay, after a day of interviewing this guy, realized, I don't need to worry about him whatsoever. He's got it covered. I can trust him to do his job, and we're going to be on the cutting edge of what we need to do. And when I say cutting edge and an innovator, and that doesn't mean a pass-oriented person. That doesn't mean Eric Bieniemy or Mike Kafka or from the Kansas City Chiefs. It means someone that is innovative in the way that they approach the game. That could be from the run game standpoint. That could be from the passing game standpoint. I don't really care. But somebody that is innovative, that can create, that can design plays to keep them one step ahead, that was the first thing that I thought of, Stacey.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to the run game being something that they are better at. I mean, I think that great offenses aren't just pass-heavy offenses. I mean, Kansas City has been around league average with their run game. It's not like they only pass. Green Bay has been great there. I mean, Tennessee, obviously, I would consider a run-first team, but they don't have the league's best quarterback. Ryan Tannehill, solid, but they also have one of the league's best running backs. So, of course, you'd be like that. Same with Minnesota with Cousins and then having Cook there. I don't know that Pete Carroll is trying to be that kind of team because, and this isn't meant as a disrespectful jab toward Chris Carson. First of all, you don't know if Chris Carson's coming back. And secondly, I would understand if you had a bevy of running back options to choose from, like San Francisco or LA right now, who are running back by committee and their running backs are pretty much interchangeable. Or if you had Dalvin Cook, Derrick Henry, and even then, one of those teams not in the playoffs and one of those teams bounced in the wild card round.
Right, but why for San Francisco in particular, why are those running backs interchangeable? It's not something that they have, you know, big name guys that are just lights out and hallmark names and guys that if they were on the free agent market, they'd get big time money. It's because the scheme is that dynamic and they do such a great job coaching it and teaching it that they, no matter who's in, it's a running game that you have to respect. So those are that's something to me that really stands out. And the second thing, Stacey, that I thought of is that if Pete Carroll is not willing to relinquish heavy involvement in the offense, then what legit offensive coordinator would want to come into Seattle? Despite having right. the chance to work with Russell Wilson and the allure that is, because they know Pete Carroll has a reputation for meddling in the offense, the offensive direction, and will get involved often in play calls in the middle of critical moments and situations of the game where you feel like, hey, during the week we've come up with our plan. I have it on my script, on my call sheet right here. This is what I want to call, my number one call. And your head coach steps in and says, no, I don't want that. So he has a reputation for that. So that to me is the biggest question here, and it leads me to believe that you're not going to bring in necessarily an innovator. You're going to bring in someone like Brian Schottenheimer, who, when Schottenheimer was hired originally to the staff, he was the quarterback coach for the Indianapolis Colts, who had a background of being a run-first-oriented play caller, but was nowhere near in high demand. This was a very shocking hire when they made that decision, when they pulled the trigger on Brian Schottenheimer. And end up turning out to work out great here, but for a short period of time. But still, he was not somebody that was in high demand. It was somebody that Pete identified very clearly that would execute his vision and what he wanted.
Well, and I know both of us have said, look, I get why Pete made the decision he did, and I probably would have made the same decision, but I am still shocked by not only the decision to bring in Schottenheimer, but the decision to part ways with him 3 years later when this was Pete Carroll's response to Danny and Gallant on Monday when asked whether Schottenheimer was coming back.
Yes, we scored more points than any team in the history of the franchise. And now it was weighted early in the year for sure, and we did not, you know, we did not score like we had been earlier. We were at a torrid pace early on. So we found a lot of good stuff. We struggled down the end to overcome the teams we were playing. We didn't match up with the kind of performances that we would like to have continued with.
Pete Carroll is not going to tell us about those conversations that have been happening between coaches. It's his prerogative not to do that, his right not to do that, and frankly, in his best interest not to do that. I understand why he wouldn't. It does make me wonder whether or not a conversation happened after this where he realized and Schottenheimer realized just how far apart they were philosophically.
That's what I have to assume. That's what I have to believe, is that this conversation had happened a day or two later, and it was very, very clear that this was not going to be a fit anymore. Now it's about it's on Pete Carroll, because this is what he wants. It's on Pete Carroll to find somebody that can innovate, that can put Russell Wilson in the best positions possible, to get DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and all the other playmakers the ball in space and in creative ways and in dynamic ways, and to keep the Seahawks offense one step ahead throughout the entire season rather than being reactionary to the difficult defenses they will face. Because guess what? If you look at their 2021 season, just the opponents that they will face, it is going to be an extremely tough year, and you better have somebody that's up for the challenge.
You don't get the AFC and NFC East anymore.
No. No, you don't.
Tough stuff. This Hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heaps is here. I'm Stacey Ross. It's time for Three Questions, brought to you by Telum Mortgage.
It's time for Three Questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
The other big news yesterday, John Schneider getting that contract extension through the 2027 draft, and it ends a couple seasons after Pete Carroll's extension does. So has Schneider's legacy in Seattle already been written, or will it be who he selects as Carroll's successor?
Yeah, well, first off, you got to get there, right? And everybody's going to assume that everybody's going to live out their contracts, that Pete Carroll's going to stay here for the next 5 years, that John's going to be here for seven, but they've got to earn that. They've got to earn that right to live out your contract. That's first. But if they're fortunate to live out that contract and continue to be on the pace that they're on, that yes, John Schneider, I think, ultimately loves the idea and the fact that his next legacy is not just going to be tied with Pete Carroll's legacy, but that he has a chance to create his own with this town, with this city, with this franchise. I think that's why it was appealing to him, or important at least, to be able to have his contract a little bit longer than Pete Carroll's.
Well, and who he selects as Carroll's successor will be, arguably, outside of drafting a franchise quarterback, the biggest decision he's going to make anyway. You're setting up your team, this franchise, for years, hopefully, moving forward. So, yeah, I absolutely think that's going to be it. The thing is, because it's in the final year plus 2 years of his deal, we're not really going to know the full kind of look of his legacy until quite a few years after his contract ends.
That's true. And so you would have to assume that at that point in time, not only is he hiring the next head coach, but that if it truly is successful, that he is getting an extension and is part of the organization even longer. But I do think that that is an appealing thing for John Schneider.
Number two.
Coaching carousel spinning. But a lot of coaches who are alive in the playoffs not getting opportunities at head coaching jobs just because teams don't want to have to wait for them. So is it time for the NFL to allow teams to hire coaches that are still alive in the playoffs?
Yeah, I do. I personally do. I think it's bogus. Now, on one end, I understand why this rule was put in place. You're in the playoffs. You want to get to the Super Bowl. You don't want your coordinators distracted, right? You want all their energy to be focused on helping your franchise win in this moment. So I get that. At the same time, I do believe that it costs people jobs, it costs people money, it costs people opportunity, and that to me, I believe for that very reason, that's why these rules should be changed. These guys should be able to manage both if they're allowed to do it at any point during the season. So you're telling me they could do it last week in the wild card round, but they can't do it during the divisional round? How does that make sense?
Well, like you said, then you become a successful OC like Eric Bieniemy, who doesn't get as many interviews. And then not only that, but if you're a team looking to replace your offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, head coach, what have you, you're also playing a bit of a gamble, letting all these other guys sign with other teams, sign contracts and deals, while you are waiting, hoping that one of the guys in these, six or so teams that are left, or eight teams that are left or whatever, hoping that one of those guys signs with you. If they don't, you're out of luck. So I completely see why teams sometimes make decisions they wouldn't otherwise make. Yeah, I'm okay with this rule being changed.
Number three.
Which divisional round upset do you think has the best chance of happening?
I think the best one...
Do you want me to read them?
No, I've got them. I've got them right here. But I think the best one of happening is potentially the Buccaneers at the Saints.
Yeah.
I think that that is the best one that you see with the way that that offense is going right now. If they can limit, if the Buccaneers defense can do their job and limit the rushing attack of Alvin Kamara, I think that they've got a legitimate chance. The other one that you point to is the Rams and the Packers. Aaron Donald has always struggled against a legitimate pass rush. And if the Rams can show that they're as good and as dominant as they showed against the Seattle Seahawks, against the Green Bay Packers, I think that there's a really good chance that they could potentially come out with an upset. But that has to be a Herculean effort, because I don't think the Rams offense is going to do what would be required in order to beat the Packers.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Ravens schedule because I was considering, well, maybe it's, you know, the Ravens at the Bills. I was hoping that they maybe had played Buffalo. I couldn't remember. They did not. They lost to the Steelers, lost to the Titans. I was trying to look for a couple other teams in here that might have been postseason teams. I'm still going to guess. I agree with you that the Buccaneers toppling the Saints would be my first choice. I think I would still take Ravens at Bills as being a potential upset over Rams at Packers. I just have a lot of confidence in Aaron Rodgers and that Green Bay offense, and very little confidence in LA's offense, even though their defense is stellar. While I think that the Ravens' ceiling as an offense is significantly higher. Like, I think that they could get hot.
Yeah.
I don't think they're a Super Bowl team. I think that they've got a chance.
Well, they've got a unique style to them, right? And it is hard to defend. So if you get Lamar Jackson going and you get that ground game going, it can be very, very tough to stop.
Well, and you can still force Josh Allen into a few mistakes here.
Yeah.
I mean, he's great, though. I love watching him.
Yeah, he's playing at a very, very high level right now. That offense seems to be in full go mode right now. I mean, Brian Daboll, Stephon Diggs. I mean, there is just so much trust on that side of the ball right now.
You guys don't have the Seahawks in here anymore, so it can't be an option. Of the remaining teams, dream Super Bowl, would it be Packers-Chiefs, the one seeds going at it, or would you mix it up a bit? Because later, when we do timeline, I have an argument to make for a team that is neither the Packers nor the Chiefs that really deserves to win a Super Bowl.
Well, the Bills, to me, would be one that I think would be really fun to see. Either way, I think if you're the NFL, you want to see Green Bay or the Chiefs, Green Bay or the Bills. I think that those two franchises, or those three franchises, are the ones that you want in the Super Bowl.
All right. Groz has seen every change the Seahawks team has made at offensive coordinator over the years. Does this one feel different? We'll ask him next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Joined right now by the Groz, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Hi, Groz. How are you?
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Good. Hey, so obviously some breaking news from yesterday afternoon. And we've been reacting to it all day. One of the things that I really wanted to make sure to ask you, you've covered so many versions of these Seahawks teams and all three changes, offensive coordinator changes, the soon-to-be-hired third coordinator under Pete Carroll. Did the parting of ways with Brian Schottenheimer feel different than any of those?
It feels unique to me. I mean, this is a strange situation, in a way. I mean, you have Pete Carroll, first off, saying what he said in his postseason press conference. Basically, the fans aren't going to like what I have to say. I want to run the ball more. You have Brian Schottenheimer, who was seemingly simpatico with that. Plus, they had scored the most points they'd ever scored during the year, although the offense obviously declined in the second half. And then you have, you know, the kind of mysterious departure the day after Schottenheimer does his press conference. So no, this one, I was trying to think if it compared to anything that I can remember in the past. And, you know, this feels like uncharted territory, a little bit different from the Seahawks perspective.
Now, Groz, one of the big questions moving forward as they look to hiring somebody new, What do you think is the biggest criteria, other than they need to have background running the football? What is the other criteria that you think Pete Carroll is looking for?
Well, there should only be one criteria, and that's someone that Russell Wilson likes, or someone Russell Wilson can deal with, or someone Russell Wilson. I mean, you're at the point with him as your franchise quarterback, like you were with Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. Although I don't know how much Belichick gave him in terms of input, that you want his input on things. I mean, he's at that point in his career, so. That's what makes this so curious, because you know you're talking about bringing in a coach who wants to run more. Is that what Russell Wilson wants? I'm curious if this will be the first time that Russell kind of steps up a little bit and is heard on what he feels should be the Seahawks posture going forward, because they're going to run the ball more unless he's convinced it's going to help his passing game and help the passing game. I'm not sure if it's the right move. So I think there's a lot of intrigue around this, a lot of palace intrigue around this, and I'll be curious, and you would know better than anyone, Jake, if Russell's going to weigh in on it at all.
Do you think that's not been the right move for them? By that I mean run first or a run-heavy offensive philosophy, because they just haven't lucked out with it? It's hard to win a Super Bowl. They've had injuries. Or because it doesn't suit their weapons?
Probably the latter at this point, Stacey, because it obviously has worked for them. And you know, they did it with Marshawn Lynch, and you know, they had the great defense, which had something to do with it, obviously. So, I mean, it has been successful before. But, I mean, it all depends on what you have. And in Chris Carson, I think the feeling was, and I know it was my feeling, that you had the kind of back that you needed. I mean, a big power back, although he had injury issues that kind of compromised that. You brought in a couple of guys to Carlos Hyde in particular to try and help with that. But, you know, it did not work the second half of the season when they kind of changed their philosophy a little bit. So I would say it's more about not having the right personnel or the exact right personnel than it is anything else, because this is something that they've done successfully, and it wasn't 20 years ago, it was 6 years ago.
Now, Graz, when you look at the three coordinators that Pete Carroll's had, you see mm-hmm. Jeremy Bates, who came with him from USC, then you moved on to Daryl Bevel, you moved on to Brian Schottenheimer. What do you expect from the next coordinator? Do you think that there will be a change in the style in which the name is? And what I mean by that, do you think that it will be a innovator, a hot name on the market, or do you think it's going to be more along the same lines of guys that maybe you weren't expecting?
I know what you're driving at, Jake, and I think it'd be exciting to see someone come in with an interesting pedigree, someone that was unexpected, someone young, someone with new ideas. But I think you're going to see someone who's got a history, and we're seeing some of the candidates being mentioned all around of being a, you know, run favoring sort of coach. So I don't think that'll be anyone that's going to, I guess the right way to put this, and I hate to say it because you kind of like to be excited about these, but I doubt it's going to be someone that's going to excite the Seahawk fan base.
Is that because of the environment he's going to come into, or because of the style of offense he'll be in favor of?
Both, Stacey. I mean, the environment being that, you know, this is a team that you know, I always say don't get tired of winning, but, you know, they haven't won in the postseason, and the offense's failure this year, you know, seemingly was about trying to run the ball. So, I mean, it's that, and it's also not being a particularly sexy name, in my opinion, not really committing to changing the philosophy of what you're going to play. I mean, Pete Carroll had it, like we said at the start of the segment, he had it on the nose. I mean, that fans weren't going to like the idea of running the ball more. They're not. And you're probably going to see a coordinator who's going to be along those lines. So I doubt he'll be an exciting hire from a fan's perspective. But, you know, the Seahawks have pulled off surprises in the past. Maybe they'll do one here.
Graz, how important is this hire going to be? Like, truly, you look at look at Pete Carroll's career, where it is right now. He's got he's got 5 years. You got Russell Wilson. You got this group. How important is this next hire going to be?
I don't think it's overstating it to say it's the most important coaching hire of Pete Carroll's tenure. I mean, you know, it's going to be one of his last coaching hires in terms of a coordinator, you would hope. That's assuming he fills out the final 5 years. But you know, you've got Russell Wilson at 33. This has got to be someone that he gets along with well. If he doesn't, it's gonna backfire immediately. And if it backfires immediately, it's gonna set the franchise back a couple of years. You're in a circumstance now where you know, and I thought it was addressed well in the newspaper today, that with the salary cap going down, you're not going to be able to add a whole lot of new talent. With Jamal Adams' trade, you don't have a lot of top draft picks, so you got to bring in someone who's gonna really mesh well right away with Russell Wilson and be able to rebuild the offense or rebuild the offense's productivity without a lot of help from the outside. So not overstating it to say this is his most important hire.
It's a perfect point to end it on. He is the Groz. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
All right, the Seahawks have their head coach. They've got their quarterback both locked up for the future, but was this latest change at offensive coordinator more about Russell Wilson or Pete Carroll? That's next on Jake and Stacey.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross with you. We've been talking about the OC change, what happened, why it might have happened, but how about who it might have happened for? Is this change more about Pete Carroll, his idea of how you win, or is it more about Russell Wilson finding a way to make Russell Wilson better in the second half of the season than he was this past year? And that's not to take anything away from Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson made mistakes too, right? Brian Schottenheimer didn't say, hey, throw a pick here. Russell Wilson has some stuff to correct.
No question.
But Russell Wilson's not going anywhere. Pete Carroll isn't going anywhere. So both can benefit from this hire. Who is this hire for? This stems in part, Jake, from our conversation the other day about what the firing of Schottenheimer
right.
or the redirection of this offense, a focus on reestablishing the run, if that says anything about what Pete Carroll thinks about Russell Wilson.
Yeah, I think that conversation to me intrigues me the most because it's fascinating to hear people's perspective on it. Because when you look at how this season unfolded, to me, it wasn't an exposure of, well, Russell Wilson can't run an offense like Patrick Mahomes. I think it was more of the idea that we need to get back to what I know best. And for Pete Carroll, what he knows best is a ball control offense that I think can be grounded in the run game, but can be dynamically explosive, and you have one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL to make that all come together. And I think for Pete Carroll, he felt very much validated in that, and he's not wrong. I'll say he's not wrong mm-hmm. with the way it unfolded with this offensive staff not being able to find creative enough solutions to keep this offense a step ahead of defenses, to keep it a step ahead of, all right, you're going to make this adjustment as a defense to play too high coverage, to play cover two or cover four, and all of a sudden you act like, oh my gosh, this is the hardest defense we've ever seen, right? And not make the proper adjustments to run the ball, to take advantage of the underneath stuff, to provide easy completions for Russell Wilson, to get this offense in rhythm. I think that those were the things that Pete Carroll looked at the offense as the way it finished and saw that as it went by, it was broken. The preparation, the game plan, the execution then by the players of Russell Wilson and co. was not where it needed to be, and they were not taking advantage of the talent that they had. So I think for Pete Carroll, as he watched this unfold, I think that, one, his defense started playing better. He wanted to predicate to that. He wanted to he was comfortable playing in those style of games to just win. He has said that. He said that multiple times. He doubled, tripled down on it after the season in his press conference. So that played into it. But I think that overall for him, this is a style that he is more comfortable with, even when they were at their best, right? They were flying high in the first five games of the season. After every single press conference, Pete Carroll never felt comfortable with it, ever. He never felt comfortable with it. Hey, it's great to win this way, but I'm not comfortable doing this. And to me, that that's okay as long as you have a clear direction of where this is going to move forward and that this isn't a two-yard and a cloud of dust type of offense, that you are utilizing Russell Wilson's talents and strengths, which I am hopeful, Stacey, as I sit here today. Yesterday I said on Wyman and Bob that I'm uncomfortable right now because I don't know where the direction of this offense is going to go. Today I am hopeful that you don't take a massive step backwards. You revitalize some of the missing pieces of what this offense wasn't in the second half of the season.
I'm not saying this is what Pete Carroll is thinking. It is fair, though, for him to say, well, what if I think that an incredibly creative Kansas City-like pass game wouldn't have been best for the personnel we have? And what if I think, if I'm Pete Carroll, that running the ball and maybe getting the running backs involved in some of that short passing game would have been more effective? I mean, there it could be that he genuinely thinks Russell Wilson's good, but I think that he needs some help from the running backs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at what went wrong in the second half of the season to Pete Carroll, cut number 7, I know we've been saying, hey, you didn't have a creative game plan. Here's Pete Carroll's explanation.
The teams that we played in the end of the year didn't play differently against us. They played the way they've been playing all year. Really, from the Giants game, those teams all were pretty similar in the way they played their fronts and the way they played their coverage. Our history has been to run the football at those teams. And we were not in that mode of that dominantly of going after the running game. We mixed it and went balanced. And, you know, you remember, you know, early in the year we were throwing it like crazy. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to run the football early in the year. And in that, we didn't, when we needed it, this is kind of a classic, you know, hey, down the stretch when you need it in the weather and all that kind of stuff, you got to run the football. Well, it wasn't the weather. We had great weather all year long. We needed to run the football more and more commitment.
Needed to run the football to counterbalance what defenses were doing. Right. As Pete Carroll said, they didn't do anything different. And I can attest to that as I watched and studied the film and prepped for that week or whatever for the show. And I'm watching these defenses. They didn't necessarily do anything different on game day. There were a few little wrinkles, things like that. But it was the inability to adjust, as I said at the beginning of the show, that was baffling. And when you've got two high safeties, you have to be able to counteract that with running the ball and taking advantage of the underneath coverage to get completions, and eventually you can get back to taking deep shots. And what we saw unfold against the Rams, Stacey, is you kept taking deep shot after deep shot, and you're exposing your offensive line. Your offensive line could not fully handle and manage Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd and whatever the case may be, yet you continue to put them in bad positions. That's the part that I just had a extremely hard time with.
Why didn't they open up game underneath? Did they feel it wasn't a strength of Will? Like, why do you think that Brian Schottenheimer
It's not a strength of Brian Schottenheimer as a play caller.
Okay.
That was always something that I was concerned with. But at the beginning of the year, Stacey, they did do all those things. They played with great tempo. They were attacking not just deep, but they were attacking short to intermediate. And that's the part that I am just lost in. I don't understand how they lost their way halfway through the season, that all of a sudden, towards the end of the season, it was almost like they had no intermediate to short pass game in their playbook. It was not something that was willing to be called. And that is an area that if you're Pete Carroll and you look at it from his perspective, okay, we have to fix this. We cannot continue to keep going down this road where I feel like Brian Schottenheimer and I are on the same page as to how to adjust and how to counteract what defenses are doing. And yet when we get in the game, that's not what's happening. You're continuing to call deep shots down the field. You're continuing to put our offensive line in a bad position. You're continuing to put Russell Wilson in a position where he has to hold the football. So those are things that I can see overall. And so I do think that that's ultimately why this decision was made. And one other point that I want to make, Stacey, is to have a dynamic offense the way like the Kansas City Chiefs have, and you talk about Drew Brees, and you look at Aaron Rodgers and all these other places, what was the common denominator that I said on Monday or Tuesday when we had this conversation? It was that they were offensive-driven programs. Offensive-driven programs. Your head coach is an offensive play caller. Your staff is the staff that he brought in and that he has, that is that brain trust and that think tank. Well, you don't have that here in Seattle. You have a defensive-minded head coach. You have Brian Schottenheimer and the rest of this coaching staff is guys that Pete has brought in. So there's a difference in the approach there. And so were they fully ready and built to be this high dynamic flying offense for the entire year? They were all doing something that they weren't typically, I guess, had PhD degrees in, if that makes sense, Stacey. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one element that you could look at. All smart guys, all great guys. I don't mean that from a personality standpoint. I mean good coaches. But I don't know if that was something that everybody was fully comfortable doing for an entire season.
I'm going to say something blasphemous because it sounds like I'm complaining about a winning franchise, a franchise that has been so fun to cover, and I'm not. But it would be a shame to think that winning and being so successful in the regular season has resulted in thinking you don't need to make any changes. Because, oh, well, we've won 10 games, we've won 11, we've won 12 every single season. And so this is the winning formula. And I don't think Pete Carroll is that far off of it. Pete Carroll is Seattle's winningest coach that they've ever had. And I know people will point to Russell Wilson and say, well, maybe it's that. Russell Wilson doesn't win on his own. They've been a really successful partnership. Can that marriage get to a Super Bowl when they presumably have two different ideas of how to win?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's a great question, and it's a great point because that's the question that we have, and that was the question that we feel all week this week, and especially on Monday, and that's why when Graz came on here with us and said that this is the most important hire in the Pete Carroll era, I don't think that's hyperbole. I think that is very, very true in what is going on right now. And how this is going to finish. How is Pete Carroll's legacy going to finish here in Seattle? We're going to remember all the winning. We're going to remember the Super Bowl trips. But if they can't get back and they can't progress, you're also going to remember the 5, 6, 7, 8 years that they could not get back with a legitimate franchise quarterback, a Hall of Fame, future Hall of Famer in Russell Wilson, and a talented roster. That will be a disappointment. And so I think that as you look forward, you have to find a way to maximize Russell Wilson's talents, to maximize DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, how special those two guys are. You have to find ways to stay one step ahead. And I think that overall, this move that Pete Carroll made was not just because he wants to run the football, but because he felt like they were not doing that effectively enough.
We've been talking about why the change might have been made, how important the hire of the new OC will be. Graz joining us 20 minutes ago saying it will be the most important hire of Pete Carroll's career. But we haven't talked about who it will be. Now, I know we don't know, but we've got a few names you need to keep an eye on. That's next.